Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, this is Scott Trout, CEO of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. There are many life changes that can happen after divorce that make it difficult or impossible to uphold requirements of your divorce decree. The orders issued in a divorce are based on the facts presented at that time, but the circumstances used in issuing those orders can obviously change. If you feel a modification to your court orders might be necessary, talk to us at Cordell & Cordell.
Contact CordellCordell.com. 1065 East Hillsdale Boulevard, Suite 310, Foster City, California, 94404.
You are listening to The Bird Calls on the Off the Glass, Nothing But Net and Up and Under networks. For more on your Pelicans, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today. All right, what's up, Pels fans? Welcome to another episode of The Bird Calls. I'm your host and contributor to thebirdrights.com, Preston Ellis. And today we're talking Pelicans, Lakers, Celtics, draft prospects, and so much more. Grub, aren't you excited? To do it, we have 75% of our starting four, which is more than the Pelicans can say at this point, I guess. And we've got some special guests, so that's pretty cool. First up, editor-in-chief to thebirdrights.com, and the man who keeps reporting, even when we're playing the Hawks, Mr. Ali Cosell. What's going on, man?
Happy Anthony Davis Day. Somebody had to say it, so I'm going to say it now.
Hi, this is Scott Trout, CEO of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. There are many life changes that can happen after divorce that make it difficult or impossible to uphold requirements of your divorce decree. The orders issued in a divorce are based on the facts presented at that time, but the circumstances used in issuing those orders can obviously change. If you feel a modification to your court orders might be necessary, talk to us at Cordell & Cordell.
Contact CordellCordell.com. 1065 East Hillsdale Boulevard, Suite 310, Foster City, California, 94404.
Get over with.
26 years old. Happy birthday to Anthony Davis. I can't wait to scroll through those replies to that. Good job by the New Orleans Pelicans handle. Directly below it, he's like, if you guys are here for the replies, go ahead to my YouTube page, and it gets even better. So make sure you guys go ahead and check that out. Next up, contributor to thebirdrights.com and the man who scored an impressive interview just last week, Mr. David Grubb. What's going on, man?
Hey, glad to be back. I've missed this. We haven't done this in too long.
Yeah, it's my fault. I've got like 14 jobs right now, so I don't even know what day it is. Kind of like Grubb, so we've got that in common. Next up, we've got two special guests, both from thebirdrights.com. First, the man who is visiting New Orleans as we speak, Mr. Chris Connor. What's going on, man?
I'm doing just fine. How's everybody?
Good, dude. Good, dude. We got Jamal Dunn over here, too. Jamal, what's happening, man?
Oh, nothing much, man. Just watching these beautiful Pels games and, you know, waiting for it to be over.
Yeah, I know, man. Me too. You can follow these guys at Ali Cosell, at DM Grubb, at JamDun6, and at Impatient Bull. And you can follow all of us at The Bird Ride. So make sure you're doing that if you haven't already. Before we get started, remember you guys can help us out by spreading the word. You know, like us, retweet us, give us that sweet, sweet 5-star rating on iTunes. We appreciate you guys so much. Let's go ahead and get started. Ali, there's so much to talk about. It's such an exciting time to be alive. We've shut down Drew Holiday probably for the remainder of the season. And Etuan Moore, in addition to that, Julius, it's pretty much the Julius Randle show at this point. But most importantly, I want to talk about what Adam Silver is doing right now with limiting LeBron James' minutes while he's shutting down Lonzo Ball and conceivably, probably Drew Holiday for the remainder of the season. What kind of precedence is this setting across the NBA? Do you think he's becoming too much of a player's commissioner at this point?
I don't know. I mean, it's a great question because at first it was pretty relatively easy. There was just one big problem. That was Anthony Davis. Now suddenly, you know, everybody's dropping like flies left and right. And I just think the bigger thing here to take away is the fact that, you know, when AD, when there was talk about sitting him down, everybody cried wolf. And then suddenly LeBron James and the Lakers are out and everybody wants to see LeBron James sit. So I don't really have much to add other than you guys probably know where my thoughts are on this. And it can't be one way or the other way with depending on the player you're talking about. And you're right, Adam Silver and the NBA kind of needs to come out with something a little more concrete than they've been doing. I mean, I just don't understand the point of what the charade, the cameos of Anthony Davis have meant to anybody these last 3 weeks. 21 minutes, he's hurting his own numbers. He's disrupting the team's chemistry. He could get hurt. The fans aren't really getting their money's worth, right? Because, I mean, that guy is obviously not trying. Every game you watch him defensively, he's loafing. I mean, I know John Collins is a good player, but he backed down AD way too easily and scored on a few buckets just too easily. He was right next to the rim. So I don't have much to add, Preston, other than somebody needs to come down to like one unanimous decision on how to handle this moving forward. But you just can't have all these separate things happening with each team doing what they want with their players anymore.
Yeah, the problem, Grubb, is that Adam Silver is classifying Anthony Davis as a star. And so when players like Jrue Holiday, this was mentioned by Alvin Gentry, he said if it was up to Holiday, he'd probably be playing every night, even with this new core muscle strain that Misty Sirui diagnosed him with. But we've seen on injury reports, illness, back spasm, all number of things with Anthony Davis, and yet they still continue to make him play or let him play, I should say. What is your take on this?
Yeah, I just find it hypocritical because the biggest thing that they talked about, even beyond just stars, was the competitive balance. And you look at the Lakers' schedule, and Ollie and I were talking about this the other night, 11 of their final 16 games are against playoff teams. And that, especially in the West, their final stretch of games are all against teams in the Western Conference that could be, you know, jockeying for that a position in the playoffs or a playoff spot. And I think that it's really unfair for the league to put that pressure on the Pelicans to force Anthony Davis onto the court, but then allow LeBron basically to choose when and if he's going to play in a far more important circumstance.
Yeah, let's go over to Jamile and continue this line of thinking. Not that Anthony Davis is helping the Pelicans win at this point. Many could argue he's, in fact, helping their lottery tanking odds. But let's just say, for the sake of the argument, that the Pelicans were winning with 20 minutes from Anthony Davis. Not only is he putting himself at injury risk, he's also actively hurting the tanking odds. In many ways, making the Pelicans organization off worse than they could previously be if they just sat all for the remainder of the season. At any point during the next 3 to 4 weeks, do you think the Pelicans finally force the NBA's hand and sit Anthony Davis?
I don't think they're going to force anything. If you're going to force something, you would have done it already, right? Now they're just in the slow circling the drain phase of the season, right? So I don't see the point, the purpose of, like, you know, ruffling any feathers at this point in the league office, right? The time to do that, and I agree, well, I guess you didn't say what they should do. But I mean, it was my opinion that you know, Gail Benson and, you know, ownership really should have just bitten the bullet at the beginning and paid whatever fine or taken whatever flack they had to take. At the end of the day, you know, the owners are the bosses of the league office. It's not the other way around. The league office can say a lot of stuff, but at the end of the day, it is your team and you have to do what's best for your team. Look, with the Pelicans, they're just the type of team right now, because they haven't won consistently, that anything they do is dumb, and any you know, anything that other teams do, depending on the franchise, may be smart, even if it's the same thing, right? So that's just where they are in terms of shutting him down at this point. I don't think it makes, you know, any sense if you haven't done it already. But so no, I don't think they're going to shut him down. But I certainly wish they had.
Chris, Ollie said earlier that Anthony Davis was backed down by John Collins one too many times. I think he had four turnovers in the first 8 minutes or so. Do you think it's possible that he's actively hurting his trade return right now?
I think that it is a small possibility, but you know, when you look at the teams that are going after him, their mindset, and I believe Ollie actually mentioned this to me before, that, you know, if you're Boston, if you're Brooklyn, or, you know, the Lakers, or whoever ends up jumping in the race, your thought process is, He's going to be in a much better situation. You're going to get everything that you can out of him. He's going to be happy, focused, and you know, motivated again to kind of prove some of the statements that he ended up coming out with in the beginning of the season about being a top five player, being an MVP candidate, the best player in the NBA, all of those conversations. So, we know when he's all in, he's, you know, an all world talent. And I don't think any executives are going to look at this situation that's been a circus and weird all around. I don't think they're looking at it and saying, it's, you know, this guy isn't going to come here and put up 25, 28, and 13 and a few blocks per game.
Yeah, for sure. Let's go ahead and transition now to Jrue Holiday. Sorry that we're keeping this crisp. We got a lot of guys on the line. I want to get to everybody's thoughts on this. Ollie, we're going to go over to Jrue Holiday right now. That core abdominal injury, that strain, that's going to get him reevaluated in the next 7 to 10 days by Misty Suri. You'd like to believe that Jrue Holiday is going to come back at some point, but I think it's in the better interest of everyone just to let him sit out the remainder of the season. My question to you is this: Jrue Holiday has been very, very good lately, especially with this ragtag group of Cheick Diallo, Kenrich Williams, Frank Jackson. He's emerged as a leader. He's doing it on both ends. I don't have his numbers in front of me, but I will as you talk. Somewhere around 21, 8, and 5 rebounds per game. He's hit most of his incentives, $510,000 in bonuses for minutes played and rebounds through the season. Here's my question. Do you think he can be the face of the Pelicans franchise going forward? And what do you think their ceiling would be with him as a number one player?
Yes, I definitely do. People seem to think that numbers equate who should be a face of the franchise, right? Stats rule all, but that's not true. And when you talk to a lot of NBA people, which I've luckily been able to do over these last couple of years, it's about how you carry yourself off the court. It's about what you do in practices. It's all those other things that nobody does talk about. And you know what? Jrue Holiday checks off every single one with ease. You know, you almost give him an A, I think, in just about every category. So he can easily carry a team. And this is the biggest thing. Does he have the respect of the locker room? Does he have the respect of the coaching staff, the trust of the staff? And all these are, again, yeses. So I think it's pretty easy to say that, yes, he can be. It's just not going to be like an all-NBA, here's my MVP candidate. But in terms of just keeping a cohesive unit, for having somebody or for having the whole team look up to, like I said, he checks all those box marks. So I think Jrue Holiday that's the plan. They're going to move forward with Jrue Holiday as the face. And like I've talked about before, we've seen that already this year. In terms of both the position that they put him in, where he's now talking in front of the cameras every night, that he is being asked by all sorts of media about everything else that's been going on team, and he has voluntarily answered everything as well. It's something he wasn't doing before. So I think we're moving that direction, Preston, yeah. And I honestly don't have a problem with it. You've got to pick somebody, right? And everybody's already following Jrue, loves him. I'm Julius Randle, talks highly of him, Frank Jackson, Alvin, everybody. So this is a no-brainer.
Grubb, here's where he sits in real plus-minus across the NBA. Behind Paul George, James Harden, Nikola Jokic, Anthony Davis, Giannis, Vucevic, Durant, LeBron James, Steph Curry, and Kyle Lowry, and Jrue Holiday is 11th in the entire NBA in a real plus-minus, according to ESPN.com, fourth among point guards. Where would you rank him among the NBA's elite right now?
You know, he's not on that LeBron, you know, Durant, that elite level, but he's on the, as far as, you know, like a Damian Lillard, that level where he's can be the lead player and take a team to that level with a good counterpart. He would need another superstar type player to win a championship, but he could definitely be your lead player and take you to very good places with your team. You wouldn't feel bad. You wouldn't feel deficient if Jrue Holiday were the best player on the Pelicans team with that transitioning, you know, over time, developing that second player or finding that second player to really be the elite guy, hopefully, or as good as Jrue. But I think Jrue is a top 15 player in the NBA this year.
Jamal, do you think it's in the Pelicans' best interest to get Jrue Holiday back on the floor this season and help develop these guys, build a culture, maybe win a couple of games? Or would you prefer to see him sit the remainder of the season?
You know, that's a tough one, but I think if this injury is real, even if it's just a minor type of a thing, there's absolutely no reason in their position why you would even think about, you know, playing him and possibly, you know, straining something further. And now he's got to actually do rehab during the off season. Now, if it's not real and just kind of a tanking injury, you know, there's a case to be made. I thought, but really, they may have already seen what they needed to see from Drew, because I really thought that game really developed once there was no crutch of like Anthony Davis or any of that to lean on, and he just kind of had to be the guy. I always wondered about him, like, could he do that even in spurts? And he was able to do that, which was really impressive. So to answer your first question about, you know, what that would mean for them as a team if they were to keep Drew Holiday, it depends on the trade package you get back. I think if you got something like Smart and Tatum from Boston, you know, I think with that sort of backcourt and wing, if you were just, you know, did Smart moves up front and a couple of bench moves, I think you could get back into the playoffs and be a really compelling team. So, no, I don't think it makes sense to play him anymore, especially if this injury, which we'll just have to take their word for it. If this injury is even a minor injury, just let him heal. There's no reason, you know, in a meaningless game against the Hawks to, like, have him, you know, strain something further.
Chris, there's only so much somebody at the point guard position can do to enter himself into the Defensive Player of the Year conversation. He's just 10th in defensive plus minus right now among point guards. Marcus Smart, Derek White, Tyus Jones, Kyle Lowry, Corey Joseph, Lonzo, among some of those guys. Do you think the way that we track our Defensive Player of the Year category is flawed right now? Do you think Drew Holiday deserves recognition on this behalf, at least consideration? Or do you think I'm overblowing this?
No, I mean, I don't think it's flawed per se. I mean, I just think, you know, you need the right individual and the right considerations all involved in with those numbers that you look at. I think a lot of well, over the past few years, of course, you know, what you do as an individual defensively, you know, has to be tied into where your team ranks. And of course, you know, we've seen that, you know, the Pelicans have had their defensive struggles over time, but, you know, we've noticed since Anthony Davis has been, you know, off and on, away, hurt, whatever the case has been, they've been much better as a team. And when you separate that and you look at what Drew's doing, you know, the issue is that all those other guys that you named, from Derek White to, you know, to Tyus Jones, to Kyle Lowry, to the Lonzo Balls of the world when he was healthy, you know, a good majority of those guys, they're objective coming into each game. It isn't normally you have to guard the best player on said team pretty much from the start to the end of the basketball game. And then outside of the other side of the floor, we need you to drop 20 plus points and hand out 8 plus assists, you know, and find a way to help us win a game. You know, I mean, I think that aspect is often forgotten. And, you know, we may sometimes, you know, we get into the metrics of the numbers a little bit too much. But, you know, I mean, I don't think you're overblown in regards to he deserves consideration. When I say he's the Defensive Player of the Year, no. But I do think out of all the guys that we named that are up there in that category, he has the most on his plate. And even if you separate it defensively, I still think he has the most point on his plate because he's guarding 3, sometimes 4 different positions. And there's not many guys that can really do that outside of, say, a guy like Paul George, who's fell off a little bit since the All-Star break, but was having a really exceptional start to the year defensively.
Yeah, and it actively hurts his defensive real plus minus when he is positioning himself against Kevin Durant, against Giannis, against Kawhi Leonard, because even though he's mitigating what these guys could do against somebody like, say, Solomon Hill or Kenrich Williams, those guys are going to get theirs, especially with the length that they have over him. Let's go ahead and continue, Ali. We're going to get to Julius Randle. I know that this one's going to be divisive, and I'm excited about it. 24 points, over 6 rebounds, over 4 assists per game over the last 10 games, and that's virtually since the All-Star break. His usage is up and his scoring is up. However, even Zach Lowe has now been privy to how inept he's been on the defensive side of the ball. Not terrible in one-on-one positioning, but just absent-mindedness, missing rotations, failing to match up in transition, that sort of thing. How valuable do you think a big man who can score at the volume that he does is, and how much do you think he earns this summer?
I think it's very important, Preston, because as we've seen this year, the Pelicans have not had a very good three-point shooting team most of the months. And so, but yet they're in the top 5 in scoring pretty much all year. So the way they've gotten that done, and let's face it, they're still scoring a lot, even with Anthony Davis minutes pretty much being cut. And that's because they can drive the ball. They're very good at penetrating and either kicking or taking it all the way to the rim. And it starts with Drew, obviously, but I think Julius plays off that really well, that same mindset. The Pelicans are always attacking, and I've caught, you know, more than several occasions the opposing coaches talk about how hard it is to stop the Pelicans because they can do a lot of different things with the ball on the court, whether it is a pass, drive, or, you know, shoot, even though they don't shoot that well. But again, they do offer a lot of that aggressive and the ability, that attacking style that you kind of want to see in today's NBA. Because if you're not an elite shooter, you've at least got to be an elite scorer. And you know what? That's what Julius Randle is. So the thing with Randle is, of course, you just mentioned, everybody knows, is his defense. And it's really his awareness. It's just really, really bad. The guy's always got his head seemingly turned the wrong way, or he's got his body out of position. You know, it's one thing or another that always gives up then an easy score to the opponent. And I know the coaching staff has been working really hard with him. But this is the thing I'm looking at with Julius. Is he a bigger net positive than he is a bit bigger net negative? And the answer to that question, according at least to plus minus, is he's a bigger net positive. When you look at the numbers, the on-off numbers for Julius, he has the second highest among all the other Pelicans since November 1st. I think that says a lot. So there's something there, and that's why I think maybe that's why the Pelicans have shown an interest. If you remember, Will, around the trade deadline, said that there's interest between Randle's camp and the Pelicans in re-signing him. So that's very understandable. And, of course, it comes down to money. Nobody wants to see Julius get the max, nor does he deserve it. But you've got to think, what is that ballpark? And for me, I think that a comfortable range would be somewhere right around that $15 million mark per season. Now, you know, there's going to be a lot of teams with a lot of money, so that's probably not going to be enough. There's always one or two teams that always kind of strikes out on their other top choices, so they, you know, basically end up settling. So I could see that very easily happening. But I wouldn't want to see the Pelicans throw more than, say, $15 or $16 million a year at Julius for, say, about a three-year deal.
What about you, Grubb?
Yeah, Ollie and I have talked about this a lot. It's just the shorter deal is better, for I think, for everybody involved. I mean, you know, it gives the Pelicans enough time to see if they can develop Julius defensively, make him more of a cornerstone, if that's his potential is. And it's also, I think it's beneficial for Julius. He knows the offense if it continues, but even then he knows the situation he's in. And he can still figure out if the Pelicans are on the way up after the Anthony Davis deal and whether or not in a couple of years he can go back on the market and maybe be in a better position. So, I mean, the teams that are out there that we've talked about, you know, who are going to have money, I think you're talking about maybe the Knicks. If they strike out on everybody, they throw some money at him. But they're not a winning team, and he wants to go to the playoffs. So, and then in the Western Conference, who are the teams that are going to have cap space that are going to be able to offer him $15 to $20 million a year? I don't know who that is. So, I mean, I think that's the advantage the Pelicans have, is that the teams who have money won't be winning teams. And they at least they have the history with him.
Jamile, weigh in on this, on what you think he earns. And obviously, Ali said that there's interest between both his camp and the Pelicans in returning. But do you think if the Pelicans offer the same amount of money as, say, a team in New York or a bigger market, do you think Julius Randle would still choose to return to New Orleans? Or do New Orleans have to outbid other teams?
I think depends on so much, right? I mean, we don't know if his coaching staff is coming back. So it kind of depends on, you know, who are the new coaches that come in, who's the new GM, what kind of feel does he have for them in terms of his comfort level, you know, on a professional level with those guys. That's going to play a huge part. I truly don't feel like the market thing, I think it's sort of overblown, right? Because nobody's ever signed with the Knicks. No one ever signs with the Knicks. Nobody ever signs with the Lakers of any import. I mean, LeBron, but that was, you know, that's basically him merging his sort of LeBron corporate thing with the Lakers. You know, so that really didn't have anything to do with them. So for a guy like Julius, I don't think that's going to make a big difference. I think he's, one, going to be looking for money, and then, two, for a large role. If the Pelicans can offer him that and they're comfortable moving forward with trying to, you know, make him a better player defensively, you know, I think it could work out. If you had, like, for instance, the package
that I mentioned last time with Tatum and Smart. If you put him, Tatum, Smart, Drew on the court, and you are you able to get a solid defensive center in free agency, whether it's on a short-term deal or a long-term deal, I mean, you're putting four good defenders around him in theory. So you would hope that that would kind of rub off on him, and the new coaching staff could also maybe coach him up a bit on that side. So there's a lot of variables. I don't think it's going to – he's going to, like – I don't think New York means anything. The one thing I always thought was interesting about Julius was when he first came in, I remember the press conference, and he really said it with conviction on his face when he said, to me, I look at this as a long-term, you know, decision when he signed, knowing that he had the option and they were going to have to come back to the business end at the end of the season. But I always kind of wondered, did AD, you know, knowing they're, you know, they kind of know each other off the court, did AD mention, hey, this is probably going to be it for me. So if you're looking for a player where maybe you could be a starting four, you know, and you could help us this season, maybe they had that conversation. I don't know. I don't have any information on that. That was just something I always thought about. So for Julius, I think it's basically going to come down to who's the GM, who's the coach, and is he as comfortable with them as he was with the presumably outgoing front office and coaching staff.
Chris, because I think Julius Randle kind of needs the floor space to initiate his own offense. He is shooting 36% from three-point range, so he has been very good from there, and that's on 4.4 attempts per game. But who do you think is the optimal front court mate to complement Julius Randle's shortcomings on the defensive end while still giving him the space he needs to operate on the offensive end?
That's tough. I mean, I guess at that point, one thing in the Zach Lowe article pointed out was that, you know, he probably fit best as a small rotation or like a small court five. To where, you know, you put him in a situation the way you can have some sort of stretch forward next to him. I mean, but I guess it depends on, you know, what type of system is being brought in from start to finish. If you're playing a more traditional style, I mean, whether he was next to Jahlil or he was on the floor next to Diallo, he was still able to pick and choose where he was able to create at. If you're putting three other guys in a backcourt or a small forward next to him that can't really shoot, it really doesn't matter where he ends up or who's his front court mate. Off the top of my head, I really can't think of anyone. I think that if there's a situation where you have Drew, you're able to get some sort of a point guard, whether we're talking Tatum ends up coming in or Kevin Knox is your small forward, you can still get away with having someone that is just going to sit down there and do the dirty work. I would look for a guy. I know Ed Davis has been one that we talked about a lot here. I know Grubb has been a fan. Kevin has been a fan. I would want someone who was just focused on doing some of the dirty work that Julius doesn't want to do, guarding bigger players, rebounding, defending the rim. That would be my goal versus having him as a small ball five on a team that's already going to lack size and, you know, overall, you know, length and athleticism. So that would be my choosing if I was at the helm.
All right, nice. Ali, I know there's a lot more we could talk about with Julius Randle, but let's go ahead and weigh in quickly. I know you probably have a follow-up.
Yeah, I think just really quickly want to say that a lot of people would say, obviously, you want to get a big man that can defend the rim, like DeAndre Jordan. I'm of the other mindset. I don't think you want to clog up that space for Drew and Julius on their drives. That's what makes them really operate at their best offensively is when they can get in that lane without having a couple guys crash in on them. So I would look the other way. I would try and get a shooter and put him out there next to Julius that can still kind of defend the rim. And my number one target would be Brook Lopez. Get somebody like him. That, I mean, you got him to stretch out the floor. That way he's not in there, but he can set some good screens. And like I said, he's bulky and big enough where you park him underneath the paint, nobody's going to go through that guy, you know? So I think that's where the Pelicans should be looking, regardless of whoever they have running the offense as a head coach next year.
All right, let's go really quickly on this one. We're going to talk about the Lakers really quickly. Obviously, Brandon Ingram is now out for the season with a shoulder injury. It's called deep vein thrombosis. It's a blood clot. Best wishes to him and his family. Obviously, we're going to gloat a little bit, but I want to emphasize that we really do hope for the best for him. I never wanted something like this to happen via injury. I was just hoping that he sucked in general and the Lakers just lost all the remainder of their game. So certainly wish the best for him. With that being said, Ali, does this remove the Lakers from Anthony Davis contention? Obviously, they're trying to get a top overall pick, but how could things get any worse for the Lakers right now?
You nailed it. Yes, yes, and yes. Lonzo doesn't want to come here. Brandon Ingram, who was supposed to be the star of the package, suddenly has something that could turn into, say, a Chris Bosh deal. I mean, worst case scenario, but yet we won't know for at least months until he's free and clear and those blood clots don't come back. So, and Kyle Kuzma, as we know, isn't anything that can headline a package. He's just simply a scorer who's very inefficient at that and a terrible defender. So, yeah, I think that's the biggest thing that nobody's written about yet. The Lakers are seemingly out of the Anthony Davis sweepstakes.
Yeah, definitely. They're going to try to get that overall pick, Grubb. That's going to be the big difference. But if they can't get a top four overall pick, you'd have to think that they're out on this. My question to you is this. Does this actively hurt the Pelicans' trade return because it eliminates a big buyer?
No, because you still have to see how things play out for a number of these teams. You know, Kevin Durant's decision changes things for a lot of people. Kyrie Irving's decision will change things for a lot of people. So, you know, and people want Anthony Davis. That's the thing, is they're going to pay. And you can get the price that you want or not, but the Pelicans have to hold firm. If they have to give on picks to get the player they want, do that. If you have to give... But don't give up the talent. You have to get some talent in return. And I think the Pelicans are going to hold firm on that. They have to find one certifiable star potential player that they can show their fan base, whether it's through the number one pick or number two pick in the draft or through a Jason Tatum type player. So I don't think they've lost in that yet. And I think the Lakers will try to find some way to add a third team maybe to a deal to bring more talent to the Pelicans. So I wouldn't put them out of it yet either.
And Jamal, we're of course hoping that the Knicks are going to land a top overall pick in addition to Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, giving them the impetus to unload Kevin Knox, Dennis Smith Jr., and their top overall pick for Anthony Davis. But let's say that those guys don't go to New York. There's no indication that they would, other than the Knicks, you know, opened up a ton of cap space and acquired extra first round picks from Dallas. But let's say we eliminate them. Then at this point, you've really only got Boston bidding against themselves. Do you think this is going to diminish the trade return at all?
It could, but it also depends on what Boston's position is, right? And it also depends on obviously how Boston finishes the season. I mean, look, there's a universe where they, I don't think this is going to happen, but there's a universe where they win the finals, right? And at that point, well, yeah, I mean, I'm not breaking up my finals team, especially a team as young as the Celtics. If you're being more realistic, maybe they get bounced in the second round. Okay, they do need more. Are you just going to bring the same team back? Because it doesn't seem like it's working there. Only because there's certain guys, the younger guys are trying to prove themselves to get themselves into a position later on in their career where they can cash in on a max or near max deal, right? So I think they would still make the deal. And you're trading for Anthony Davis. So there will be other suitors. There's going to be suitors who we don't even, you know, think about. The Clippers will be in there, and I don't love Clippers package, but you know, there's still a team that can offer something. So if the Celtics are saying, because if you take Tatum out of the deal and say it's like Smart, Brown, and I don't know, some kind of filler and picks, well, that's not that much better than what the Clippers or maybe Toronto or some other teams could possibly offer. Even the Knicks, right? Even if the Knicks, you know, don't land the top pick, you know, if they've got number three or four plus their young players, if you're not including Tatum in the deal, I would still send AD to the Knicks for that deal. So I think they're going to be fine. They're going to get a good deal, assuming they, you know, make a good hire in the front office. They're going to get a good deal regardless of for what happens with these different guys. But, you know, I really don't – I just have such a hard time. I don't understand these guys. I can't understand how Durant could leave a team that could be this historic and have a chance to four-peat, which none of the modern greats have done. I don't understand it. But if that were to happen, I still think the Pelicans will be fine. There'll always be somebody out there who's trying to add a talent like Anthony Davis. So I don't worry about it.
I'm 100% with Jamal. I just had to say that. You nailed it, buddy. I agree. Somebody's going to want him, jump out of the woodwork, just like Masai did in Toronto. For Kawhi, who I felt like had even a bigger questionable surrounding, you know, family, history, the personal off-the-court problems.
All right, we'll finish up with Chris. I'm deeply concerned, not just because Anthony Davis only has a year remaining on his contract, these theatrics he's gone through with LeBron James on the shop, some of the comments that he's made publicly. There's a lot of teams that might scare, specifically because he does only have 1 year remaining on his contract, and he could always come out and say that I don't want to re-sign with this team and help diminish the trade value even more so. Do you think the Lakers losing all these players and everything seemingly blowing up in Los Angeles is going to diminish the trade return this summer?
No, I'm not of that thinking just yet. I mean, you know, the rumors around Paul George before he went to Oklahoma City was that, you know, it was the writing was on the wall a year prior that he was going to end up signing long term with the Lakers and no place else. That's exactly where he was going. There were rumors that he even went to Indiana and said, I don't want to be here. This is where I'm going to go. Now, Toronto was a little bit different, but Kawhi Leonard and his camp were very clear. We're moving to L.A. Even with this Toronto deal, this is where we're going. But the deals ended up still happening. Now, I don't know how those feel about DeMar DeRozan and the package in total that San Antonio ended up getting for Kawhi. But, you know, if the Pelicans got something similar, an all-star caliber player and company, you know, a pick or so, I mean, I think guys would end up taking that depending on who was, you know, what general manager, what coach was behind the whole ordeal. I can't see it only because AD no matter how we feel about him, you know, he's proven his talent in the league. You know, he's proven that, you know, with the right person in his ear, he may be able to be swayed a little bit. And with the Lakers, although, you know, we see all the theatrics and everything that's went around it, they're also falling behind in the whole, you know, in the old race in regards to teams that would fit well with him going forward. I'm sure that the talent around him that he's going to be playing with is going to matter. LeBron's getting older. We don't know what's going to happen with Brandon Ingram. Who else is going to be there? Lonzo Ball is a question mark. At some point we have to question if Anthony Davis is even going to be thinking, you know what, you know, I would like to be, you know, in Los Angeles. I would like to play with LeBron, but, you know, on what terms? Maybe I'll go over here, you know, in Boston and play with my friend. Maybe I'll go in New York and get guys to, you know, come play with me in a market. Or maybe, you know, Kyrie follows. You know, whatever the case may be, I think as we continue to move forward, and especially with the talks about the report about Magic and some of his maybe incompetence being a general manager or being a front office exec, you know, I think at some point, you know, we got to question when AD is going to say, you know, maybe the Lakers isn't the spot for me right now.
All right, we got to keep it going. We got 20 minutes left. Late breaking news. The Lakers coaching staff wanted to re-sign Brooke Lopez and Julius Randle before Magic signed JaVale Beasley and Lance, and they should add Rondo to that report. So things could not be worse in Los Angeles right now. All right, we're going to do rapid fire right now, Ali. Everybody's going to get one topic, and we're going to finish it out that way. I'm going to start with you, Ali, and Cheick Diallo, 10 points, 8 rebounds over the last 10 games since All-Star break. Also, 65% from the field. I think he's a restricted free agent this summer. Do you think he's in for some sort of payday?
No. I mean, when you say payday, I guess I'm thinking $8 million plus a year or something like that. And I don't think I see that. He can probably end up with something like maybe top is what Aminu took when he went to Portland, something like that, $6 million a year for, say, 3 years. But other than that, no. So I still think that the Pelicans, if they can get him somewhere in that price range, should honestly consider it. This guy's really improved. And you got to remember, he still has barely ever played any basketball before this level. And this is the first time he's actually seeing competitive minutes on a consistent basis against the NBA. And he's got everything there other than the hands, you know? I mean, he could be a little bit taller, be a little thicker. But if he could just get those work on those hands, there's not too many that are better off the bench of what they do. So I would like him, if the Pelicans could get him, say, 5, 6, 7 million tops per year.
All right, let's go over to Grubb and Frank Jackson. The past 10 games, 12 points, 5 rebounds per game, and somewhere around 25 minutes per game, I want to say. And he's been shooting a bit better from three. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think it's somewhere around 47% and 35% from three-point range. Talk about what you've seen from the Ferrari lately.
Offensively, he looks like he's figuring things out more. It's a little more difficult when Drew isn't on the floor. He needs to be kind of guided at times, but that's to be expected. Again, he's a guy just like Chet who hasn't played a lot of basketball at the highest level. So he's still adjusting from night to night, but you like to see that he stays aggressive. He continues to attack the rim. He's not afraid to take the three, even before, you know, late in the shot clock situations. So, you know, his shot selection could be a little bit better, but again, that comes from young players. The biggest thing that Frank continues to need to improve on, and we knew that coming in, is his defense. He just has to get better, you know, on the ball and his off-ball awareness. But that's been a Pelicans issue all season long. But I think he'll get better. He wants to get better. You can see the effort. And like Ollie talked about earlier, there's that following of Drew, you know, watching him and learning from him. And I think that'll, by next year, with Frank having been on the court so much more, things just look better and better for him. I see him as a regular contributor. He's got to make he'll make a small jump. But then I think the year after that is when you really start talking about Frank as a solid sixth man.
All right, Jamile, I want to talk about Kenrich Williams with you. Over the last 10 games, he's regressed. He's just at 7 points and 5 rebounds. He's not shooting well from the field, under 40% and 31% from three-point range. I don't know if any of it is directly correlated to Elfrid Payton's return, but he just seemingly hasn't been comfortable offensively. Talk about Kenrich Williams. Is this a natural regression for a rookie, or do you actually have some concerns?
No, I mean, look, it really would have made more sense for Kendrick to come out of the gates in terms of when he started getting big minutes, come out of the gate like this and then improve to what we saw earlier. But it doesn't always happen like that with young players, right? Progress isn't always linear like that. So, no, I think he's just sort of having one of those rookie swoons, right? We've seen guys like Frank Jackson, right? We've seen him go for maybe 2 games and he's, you know, hitting his open shots and making the right pass and not rushing. And then, you know, the next game he comes out and he looks, you know, awful, like a rookie again. Right. So I think that's what Kendrick is going through. I think also the lineup, all the different lineup changes, when he was doing well, I mean, they had lineups that probably suited him better, but also the lineups were staying somewhat, you know, somewhat static, at least, you know, for this team. Right. With the young guys playing and then trying to fit the whole AD thing in there. But so I think it's just natural regression. He doesn't cost them anything. He's shown enough in actual NBA games that you can bring him back. Again, it doesn't cost you anything. So I think he's definitely a part of their future. I think we'll see how big a part of the future, you know, maybe in summer league and early next season, though.
All right, last one. This one's for Chris. Jahlil Okafor was playing really, really well before the All-Star break, specifically from the end of January through early February. I don't remember the exact numbers, but he was averaging somewhere around 19 points and 10 rebounds per game. Lately, just 5 points and 3 rebounds per game in just over 12 minutes. I know that ankle's been giving him issues, but are you concerned about Jahlil?
No, I think during the time in which he was playing really well, I mean, putting up, you know, close to, like you said, 20 and 10 over a short span. The lineups, again, similar to the issue with Kenrich, and I mean, a bunch of other young or role players on the team. The lineups changing over and over again in regards to Anthony Davis being next to him. Then, you know, then he's off the bench and he may be playing 5 minutes, then he's in starting again. When we saw Jahlil at his best, playing his best, you know, for the most part, for a good period, the ball and the offense, you know, would go through him a lot. And then when you started to see him have to play more of a role, or more of a smaller role, he started to struggle a little bit. My thought process on Ja was that I think over time, overall, he can be a third big, You know, he got all of us excited, but just like anything else, it's highs and lows. And right now, you know, he's going through a low. He's battling ankle problems. I saw the comments about Gentry in his low top shoes. You know, but I know, I mean, you know, he's very skilled. We know what he can do well. As long as he's put in a situation, in a system with a coach that's going to, you know, believe him and put him in the best spot for him to succeed, he's a decent rim protector, but if you bring him out on perimeter to play defense, it's not going to go well. You know, decent screen, setter, he's a guy that will make the right pass. He can do a lot of things well on a basketball floor. And today's game with fundamentals and, you know, incentives from a low post perspective on what they used to be, you know, he's kind of a rarity. So if you put him in a situation off the bench where, you know, he's coming out giving you 20 minutes a game, he continues to improve, you know, in the offseason, I don't see why he shouldn't be a part of this future, even if it's a, you know, on a short-term deal.
All right, let's get to our questions now. Ali, this is from our friend Waka Waka Wakanda. He says, do you think Gale sees how the Hawks are building through the draft, establishing a culture, and maybe makes that a priority for the incoming GM? Also, how amazing is Sir Foster? He says, we went to the same college for the Hawks. And here's my question to you, Ali. Obviously, the Hawks are doing it the right way. They're grooming and developing young players. Do you think that's the route that the Pelicans go, or do you think they're more ready to win now next season?
Unfortunately, they're more ready to win now, and it's going to be because of that Anthony Davis package. We've all heard the types of deals that might be out there, and it all revolves around getting a star young player back with that superstar potential. So I think that's exactly what they're thinking. It's going to be not Dell Demps 2.0, but they want to convince Drew Holiday to stay. They want to basically not go through any long rebuild, so that's the best way for them to do it. Now, granted, if they were, say, presented an opportunity to end up with the first overall pick and then maybe land another one of their own, say they get lucky in this upcoming NBA lottery, then I think you really have to look hard because there's a lot of good talent. And and if you've got a good culture, it's not a problem going through what Atlanta has done or any other team that has decided to exclusively go through the draft. But I think they're going to go through what I said earlier. They're going to go ahead and try and get another young guy or two, bring in around Drew Holiday and maybe Julius Randle, whoever they keep or bring back. And that's going to be the route they take.
All right, Grub, this is from Fire Week, Joe Oliva. He says, what's your top three possible trade packages for AD? Is a Knicks package sufficient with Ja RJ instead of Zion Williamson?
Yeah, I mean, you know how high I am on Ja Morant. So, you know, that to me is the best basketball outcome. And we've talked about that. So I'm not going to do my whole spiel on that again, but yes, I would certainly take that as a backup package. I mean, obviously the number one is the Boston package, the dream package of getting Tatum, Smart, and a big, and those picks that would be number one. The Knicks, and I think the Clippers are both in a very good position as well, because I think with the Clippers, you get hopefully a young, talented point guard, Gilgeous Alexander, and then you get an expiring contract in Danilo Gallinari, and then maybe a Montrezl Harrell to play up front, and then you have those picks. Or if it's not Harrell, you take another piece, just, you know, that you can use, like Shamet. So you have that rookie. So I think, yeah, there are other packages that are exciting, but those would be my top three. I think the Lakers now, they fall way behind. And then the dark horses we talked about before, I think Denver or Toronto could both put together packages that could be interesting depending on how things fall.
All right, Jamal, this is from You Can't Handle the Truth. He says, what do you think happens with Check this summer? I think Ali did a pretty good job of summarizing that one. His second question is, who do you think starts at point opening night next year? Do you think it's Elfrid Payton? Do you think it's someone the Pelicans draft? Or do you think it's possibly a free agent?
Yeah, I don't think that person's on the roster right now. And I don't know, if I had to, you know, bet my life on it, I would say probably some free agent. But you know, maybe not, right? It's probably going to be a part of that AD trade. Like, if you're getting Smart back, I could see Smart being the starting point guard opening night. If they go with the New York deal, there's a couple of options, right? You could have Dennis Smith Jr. You could have Ja Morant, perhaps, depending on where that pick is. Even if you went with like a Clippers deal, you could see something like a Patrick Beverley. starting for them. He probably needs somebody else behind him, but at least as a starting tandem, him and Drew would be amazing in the backcourt. So I don't think that person's on the roster currently. If I had to guess, I'm going to guess that position is going to be filled via trade, and then probably they'll add some depth via free agency. But there's always the wild card with the pick, right? And really, Ja Morant is the only option there in terms of somebody who you're going to pick this year who could possibly start opening night. So I'm going to say it's probably going to get filled via trade.
All right, Chris, this is from our friend Tejeda. He says, what are the Pelicans take advantage of how marketable Drew can be in NOLA moving forward?
Why haven't they taken advantage of all the players that have been marketable in the past, you know? You would hope, I mean, me and Kevin wrote, put together a wonderful piece about the music scene needing to be more of a play in, you know, the marketability or the overall selling of the team. And, you know, hey, I mean, I don't know. I would hope that maybe if Drew is, if he's going to be alone with someone, or even if it's just, let's say, you know, they plan on keeping him for a year and trading him, you know, next summer or something after next. If that's the plan, I hope that with him being the new face of the franchise, you know, you'll find a way to take advantage of how unique of an individual he is. I hope that, you know, there's been talks that the team has been, the organization has been listening to the fans. But man, I mean, it would be awesome, you know, from the headband to, you know, just the type of quirky individual he is. I mean, how family oriented he is. You know, find a way, you know, to dig deeper into this guy who has had to overcome a lot, you know, on the basketball floor and off the basketball floor with the city that's had to do the same thing. You know, they could really have something there if they, you know, chose to go that route. So I don't know. Maybe, you know, there will be some new members of that, you know, particular part of the staff, but I'm hoping that, you know, they did a decent job, I guess, with Anthony, but they could have done more. And I'm hoping that, you know, maybe with Drew, you know, ties turn a little bit.
All right, Ollie, this is also from Tejeda. He says, if the Pelicans pick Lance top three, do you think that it will prompt the GM to lean towards a certain trade package more, or does it not matter? Do you think they just take whoever lands there?
Wait, say that again?
Sorry, I confused myself as I was reading it. I think what Tejeda's saying is, if the Pelicans get, let's say, like a top three pick and John Morant and Zion Williamson are off the board, do you think they go ahead and take someone like a Cam Reddish or RJ Barrett, or do you think they explore the trade landscape a bit with that player?
Oh, with the pick, you're saying? No, you've got to think that they're going to draft whoever is their best available on their board. You can't keep trading picks, and now that, you know, there's no impetus to win now because you have that superstar player. There's absolutely no reason to go down that route, no.
All right, Grub. Positively Pelicans asked, who are some cheap free agents you would want to see the Pelicans spend money on? And I know that Ed Davis is probably among them.
What would make you say that? I have no idea why anyone would associate me with that. But yeah, absolutely. Ed Davis is one. But I mean, there are some others that aren't cheap that I would still like to see the Pelicans go after. And it's another one that Ollie and I were just talking about the other day is Derek Favors. I mean, I really think Derek Favors could do big things with the Pelicans based on his ability to knock down the jump shot, defend in the post. And he's done it in just relatively few minutes this season for Utah. So he's somebody that I would really like the Pelicans to pursue. But yeah, I think the biggest thing is to find front court help, because you think that your back court and your wing help should be coming in all of your targets in the Anthony Davis trade. That's what you're looking for. So to me, free agent market should be about getting bigs and point guards.
All right, let's follow this up with Jamile and Chris. Give me two names of free agents that you hope the Pelicans target this summer. Let's start with Jamile.
Yeah, so it depends on, you know, their whole trade package situation. But I would say I've always wanted Patrick Beverley. And so, you know, regardless of what happens, like whether it's we bring in a starter via draft or trade, like I think Beverley can fit basically any situation, right? If Smart is starting, okay, then fine. You just have another great defensive guard coming off the bench who can also hit a three. if John Morant, for instance, is starting, or maybe if you get John Morant, maybe you bring him off the bench and start Pat Beverly, right? And you have an older vet who's closer to the end. He's 31, so he still has some time, but you know, who might be willing to maybe tutor a young point guard, right? So he's a guy, regardless of their situation, who I would target. And then a second person, again, it depends on their situation. I this might be an unpopular one, but I like Paul Millsap, not on like some long-term deal. He's an older player. I think he's 34. But on like a one-year deal, or maybe a one-year team option or something. He's getting to the point where even as savvy as he is and as good of a player as he is, I don't think he's going to get those big contract offers anymore. I think you could probably get him somewhere in the 15 to 17 range on a one-year deal. He's a Louisiana guy, so maybe he might be amenable to coming back. And I just think he would be a nice – everybody on the team can't be 23 yet, even though I know we all want that. But he might be a nice stopgap up front for you, in the event that you don't have a big going into the season. Also, I wouldn't hate, and it depends on how much you risk. Actually, you probably couldn't even do that, so I won't say that. But Paul Millsap, if you don't bring back Randall and you need some help up front on a short-term basis, will be a guy who I would like to take a look at.
All right, what about you, Chris?
I mean, I'm going to piggyback off of Grubb and Jamil here. Jamal. I think that both a guy like Ed Davis, of course, is definitely an interesting guy. Mainly because he's an individual that he doesn't need much around him to really do his job. He doesn't need the ball. He's a smart guy that's going to make all the right plays. He's fairly quiet. He's been in the league for a little bit, but he's not relatively an old guy. And he's been in a bunch of different situations on separate teams throughout his career. He's seen terrible teams. He's seen average teams. He's seen playoff teams last year with Portland. And then this team, he's probably looking at another one with Brooklyn, So he has a bunch of different experiences that he can bring to a team. And if they're looking to reload, as Ali talked about, I think he would fit in just fine. He's not going to cost much. I don't know how he fits, considering that, it seems like there's still going to be some sort of clutter at a big man, at the big man area, but, in the front court. But we'll see once again what the new general manager or if Danny Ferry is it, will end up doing. And then I'm with Jamal on Patrick Beverly just because, you guys know how I feel about jerks and this team. We need one. And, I mean, the thought process of, let's say they take the Boston deal. You got Marcus Smart and Patrick Beverly on the same team. I mean, we'd be the most irritating team in the history of basketball. So not to mention what that can do defensively. I mean, if you got three guys between Drew Holiday, Patrick Beverly, and Marcus Smart, or even if it's not Marcus Smart, let's say, if Pat Bev is on the team, another guy who, has been in small markets, he's been in big markets, and he's not afraid of any challenge. He doesn't – like, it's not apparent to him that the Clippers probably don't have the talent to be making the playoffs in the Western Conference. I mean, they're finding a way being well coached. They were a team that traded away guys, traded away a guy like Tobias Harris, and still more than likely going to make the playoffs in the Western Conference. I mean, but you couldn't tell him that they didn't have a shot. He said in the beginning of the year when everybody was high and dry or talking about the Lakers left and right and how they were going to be a Western Conference finals participant. He said we're the best team in L.A. You want a guy like that on your team, and that type of energy, that type of confidence can pass on to your young guys. And maybe some middle of the road players that are still trying to find their way. I'm totally with Patrick Beverly. He's as New Orleans as it gets. So that's where I'm at with it.
All right, you guys, I know you have a lot of draft questions, and we're definitely going to continue to talk about that as the summer progresses. Obviously, May 14th will answer a lot of those questions for us. But before we go, Crescent City Connect says, potential draft prospects around our pick. I like DeAndre Hunter from Virginia. I think he can be a Kawhi type from us. I've heard Brandon Clark from Gonzaga would be a good pick. Any others? Ali, I've looked at four different mock drafts, and the guys 5 through 15 are all over the place. Who do you think naturally ends up somewhere around the Pelicans pick?
I'm in love with Rui Hachimura. He's the leader of that Gonzaga team where Brandon Clark's also playing. But this guy is about a 6'8" wing. He's been compared to Giannis Light because he's got a super quick step, first step. He can handle the ball, but he's really long. Not as athletic, but he's no slouch either. And his shot is improving. And I heard that Danny Ferry was out there looking, checking him out not that long ago. I think he saw some game at the start of this month. So I know the Pelicans have an eye on him. And the more I read about this guy, he's half Asian, half African. He seems like a really good kid. And like I said, he's got that length. He's 6'8", he's got a reach that's over 7 feet long, can handle the ball. He seems like a dream at small forward to me.
All right, Grubb, what about you?
I like Hunter a lot. And if he were available, I think, yeah, at 6'7", you know, he's got guard skills. They play him on the wing to handle the ball. And I think he also could be strong enough to play, you know, the two and the three. Shooting is really, really good out of him. I like him a lot. Kobe White is another guy that I like. The only thing I would want for Kobe is shot selection to be a little bit better. But Carolina plays so much in transition that I think sometimes he forces the three a little bit. But that, like, if the Pelicans are getting multiple picks, somebody, if it's a further down in the first round, I like Bruno Fernando too, out of Maryland, to be that kind of pick and roll big man who can you know, roll to the rim, be very athletic, block shots with a little bit of length, you know, and also just can pop out a little bit right now and should develop even more going forward.
All right. I like Jackson Hayes out of Texas, 75% from the field, 4 block shots per 40 minutes. He's basically Clint Capella. And I think that's the type of player that the Pelicans need alongside Julius Randle and Jrue Holiday going forward. Somebody who can still, you know, do the dirty work. Pretty much just a souped up Cheick Diallo, I guess. But obviously all these guys would be great and would be welcome additions to the New Orleans Pelicans franchise. It's very exciting to finally have a top pick for a change. You guys, that's all the time we have for now. Sorry to cut off Jamile and Chris, but thank you guys so much for joining us. Remember, if you guys like what you're hearing, spread the word. Like us, retweet us, rate us. You've been listening to at Ali Cosell, at DM Grubb, at JamDun06, and at Impatient Bull. Thanks to each of them for joining us. Ali, before we sign off, anything you're working on?
Yeah, I've got a whole bunch of things in the works. Something on Alvin, something on Kenrich, and a few other articles as well.
Sweet. What about you, Grubbs?
I got stuff. I'm just trying to find that one piece of inspiration because every time I feel like I've got one, the Pelican situation changes.
Me too. Yeah.
And I'm having to revise. So, I mean, it's like I've got three things working and I'm trying to just see which one boils first.
All right, Jamile. We've lost Jamile. What about you, Chris?
Go ahead, Jamile.
Let's go ahead and do Jamile first.
Okay, so for me, actually David gave me an idea in the DMs one day about doing a piece on abolishing the draft. And so I've been doing some interesting research on it. I've had to like start researching like how European and Asian sports franchises kind of do talent acquisition in terms of young players. So that's pretty interesting, but I learned a lot about that. So it's kind of a lot of research that has to go into it, but that's really a kind of interesting topic that I'm looking forward to writing about.
All right, Chris.
Well, me and Kevin have been speaking about doing a sequel of sorts to our music comparison that we did. Our music marketing idea that we did. But at this time, it will be some sort of comparison to various musical arts. And how they would fit, or who would be who, in comparison to the current roster of the Pelicans. So we haven't put it all together just yet, but you know, some sort of a sequel or you know a remix to what we did originally. So that should be fun whenever he's not at work.
Very exciting. We'll have our eyes out for that. Thank you guys again for listening. I'm Preston Ellis. You can find me at Preston Ellis. Make sure you stick with the Bird Rights going forward. I know the last couple of weeks of the season are going to be pretty rough. Things are going to get darker before they get much better, but a lot of exciting things on the horizon. In addition to free agency, we've got the draft coming up. We've got the Anthony Davis trade coming up. And of course, we still got a lot of young talent that needs developing, and we'll have a chance to see that over the next upcoming weeks. So stick with us, you guys. For now, let's go Pels. Thank you for listening to The Bird Calls on the Off the Glass, Nothing But Net, and Up and Under podcast networks. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes, retweet, share with your friends, and most importantly, subscribe today.
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
GEICO presents yet another voicemail from your roommate.
Hi! So, about the kitchen. Turns out, when there's a grease fire, you're not supposed to throw water on it. Who would have known, right? Anyways, the fire department is here, and it's totally cool. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
The GEICO Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if danger is your roommate's middle name. Visit GEICO.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.